Welcome to Supernatural Podcast episode number 36 for Houses of the Holy, which originally aired in the US on February 1, 2007. Let's jump into the recap, courtesy of Wikipedia and my comments. It was written by Sarah Gamble, who wrote several other episodes, including Faith last season, and it was directed by Kim Manners, my favorite of the Supernatural directors. Sam and Dean investigate murders in a town. The people committing the crimes turn out to be people with extreme depression, and they commit the murders cheerfully due to the fact they believe an angel told them to kill the people because it is God's will. So Sam and Dean conduct background checks on the victims and find that they are indeed committing crimes, from murder to perversion. Sam inspects the tomb of a recently murdered priest and meets the angel for himself, and is given a person to slay in return for redemption. Dean remains skeptical and finds proof that the angel might just be an angry and vengeful spirit. They purchase supplies to conduct a seance to see if it was the being Sam encountered. On their way out of the shop, Sam sees his target with a glowing, luminous light. Dean orders Sam to conduct the seance while he trails and follows the target. Dean, trailing the target, becomes convinced that the man is not doing anything wrong. He was on a date and gave flowers to a young lady. She got into his car and they were off, but Dean kept pursuing just in case. He lost sight of them as he turned a corner and they seemingly vanished. Meanwhile, Sam conducts the summoning ritual and Father Reynolds walks in and questions his odd behavior. As he was escorting Sam out of the room, Father Gregory, the deceased priest, appears, just like he did to Sam and the people he spoke to before him. Father Gregory explains that he is an angel and receives the word of God. He is giving hope and redemption to those who choose to carry out God's will, in his opinion. Father Reynolds explains this is not what they are meant to do. Attacking people and murdering them is vengeance and against the commandment of thou shalt not kill, which is God's will. Father Reynolds begs for Gregory to let him give his final rites, so that he may be at peace. Gregory seems unconvinced and scared until Reynolds begins reciting the rites. He starts to disappear and kind of flickers on and off, and then kneels to accept that he is not an angel, but a spirit. He disappears in a bright light, apparently to the afterlife. Meanwhile, the man stops the vehicle in a deserted street while the woman ponders about the situation and becomes uneasy. He leans to her and kisses her forcefully, and she pulls back, trying to get him to stop. He then slaps her and begs for forgiveness. She attempts to open the door to leave, but he locks her in. Getting angry, he turns a knife on her and threatens her, and gets close to her again while she holds his hands. Dean punches the window and pulls him off her and knocks him out onto the steering wheel. He unlocks the door so that the woman can escape and proceeds to tell her to call 911. The man reawakens and drives off with Dean in pursuit. During the navigation of the streets, a vehicle in front swerves to avoid collision at an intersection with another vehicle, and a long pipe being carried above comes off its strap and bounces directly into the windshield of the man running from Dean, impaled him through the chest, and killed him. Dean was speechless. When Sam asks Dean about it later, he states he saw what he thought to be God's will. Whether he was saying this to denote a new level of faith or simply to bolster his younger brother's belief is unclear. So let's move on to my analysis and discussion with Josh. Hi, I'm Ellen.
And I'm Josh.
What did you think of the episode?
Well, I actually really enjoyed it. I know there's a lot of talk out there saying that it was kind of boring, and I can understand that coming from, you know, the excitement and action pack of the last episode, you know. Mm-hmm. But this time I thought it was thoughtful and well plotted, and it didn't belittle anyone's beliefs, but it did address something that, you know, definitely has to come up in a show of this nature, and especially with the job that Sam and Dean are in, you know, you have to come across the question of spirituality at some point.
Yeah, I've been waiting. I'm not a religious person at all, but I was waiting for this episode to come around, especially after they sort of piqued our interest in faith.
Right.
You know, it's like they've been giving us little bits, but not enough to really know, you know, and this type of work they're in is so spiritual.
Right.
So, I was looking forward to an episode like this, and I thought it was really well done.
I agree, even though the plot, it did remind me of the movie Frailty with Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey. Did you see that movie?
I did not. It's in my Netflix queue.
There's some similarities. It's very different as well, though, so... But I can see where it may have been a little bit of an inspiration.
Okay. Well, they love using pop culture, so no doubt.
Right.
You know, I think the good thing about Supernatural is the subtle way it builds up its mythology, rather than just saying some episodes are standalone and others are mythology. It kind of uses a little bit of both on every episode. And The last two, especially, fit this pattern with Night Shifter and Skin and Usual Suspects, and then Houses of Holy and, or Houses of the Holy and Faith. And I like that we got a lot of character development, even though it kind of brought up the same stuff again. It moved beyond it.
Right.
And I thought it was very rewarding.
I agree. I think that, like you said, it brought up the whole question that we've been dealing with all season about Sam's destiny and what he's going to do with that. And of course he's worried about it, and we've heard him agonizing, but it was different this time because we saw a little bit about how he deals with it in a way that we hadn't seen before.
I love the discussion on religion and spirituality. I thought it was great, especially that scene where Dean is talking about Mom, Mary, and how when she tucked him in at night, told him angels were watching over him, and then that was like the last thing she ever said to him, and then she died.
Right.
So, as a 4-year-old, you could imagine how terrible that would be. Oh, well, how come the angels aren't watching over Mommy if they killed her? So I could see that would lead to a huge crisis of faith, even if it is, you know, for a 4-year-old.
Right. And, I mean, it's the same discussion people have every day of their life. It goes on all the time. You know, some people say, well, you know, Mommy was killed because there are no angels watching over her. Others would say maybe perhaps Dean was saved because someone was watching over him, you know.
Yeah.
It's a fine line. But I agree. I enjoyed the discussion of spirituality. I liked it. I was nervous, you know, how it was going to be portrayed. But I liked, in particular, the discussion at the end because, you know, that's something that it's unavoidable even for brothers who, you know, kind of avoid serious subjects like that. But giving them a line of work that they've got to discuss that kind of thing and leaving it open-ended at the end, I think, was a nice touch where each come closer to seeing each other's point of view.
You know, Dean was going on about how you need to have proof, you know, and in his line of work, I mean, seriously, they believe in just about anything, but not angels. Like, he's very specific on that, and we know why, but he said, I need scientific proof, and it was almost like watching CSI, where, oh, you have to have proof. But, I mean, and I'm the scientific mindset. I was a science major as well, so I understand the need to have some sort of evidence before you can believe it, but they run on all sorts of stuff like that.
So right.
I loved it, but at the same time, I was thinking, Dean, really?
Right.
You of all people in your line of work, you're questioning?
Oh, I agree. And that was on my didn't like list, that Dean's skepticism was, you know, it was believable on one hand because, you know, yeah, he needs proof, but the kind of things, like Sam said, they face every day, it kind of, you know, leans to an open mind because a lot of people wouldn't believe what they deal with every day. It just seems to me in reality it would be more like perhaps Dean wouldn't deny their existence or their existence of a good force in the world, but perhaps be more resentful that he doesn't feel it's as active in his life as it should be or as active in the world as it should be.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, you have to have your bad with your good.
Right.
And he doesn't seem to have that, but maybe there are other ways of goodness in his life or that he sees around him, just not angels.
Right.
Maybe it's just angels that he has a problem with.
But overall, I think, you know, I think that the issue was handled delicately enough, you know, not to offend anyone's sensibilities. And I think that, you know, I'm not a Catholic, but I don't think their beliefs were belittled at all in the situation. And, you know, the priest at the end, the older priest, and even the dead one seemed like, you know, they were both very earnest and, you know, right-minded. He was just very misguided. But I liked that the fact that the angels they discussed weren't, they mentioned the other nature of angels, you know, the perhaps more fearsome and powerful as opposed to, like they said, the versions on the Hallmark cards that we see so often.
Yeah, I mean, there are all the different types of angels, and I was kind of hoping it would be more on the evil avenging angel sort of side, so this worked out exactly how I thought. But they didn't tell you till the end. Which was fantastic.
Yes, that was on my likes list. I liked that there was a mystery. Because, you know, like a lot of times we see the crimes being perpetrated and, you know, we see whatever they're going to be soon investigating.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, we were left, you know, not knowing what was going on till the end.
Yeah, and I love that. You just didn't know. Usually I can see that stuff coming, even if they mean for it to be a big mystery.
Right.
You can kind of see along the way what's going to happen. But this one, I just didn't know until the end.
Right.
Which makes it good, in my opinion.
I don't know if it was a fake sitcom or a real sitcom that was playing at Gloria's Place. but originally I thought it was fake, you know, that it was written by the writers and they had the performance. But then I put on the subtitles, or, you know, the closed captioning.
Yeah.
And it said, like, Drew was the guy who was speaking. So I didn't know if it was Drew Carey or what. But to me, it struck me because I thought the line that they said, you know, "Don't touch the troll," some woman screams. And the guy says, "Is that what your mom used to say to your dates?" But to me, it was like the perfect example of a bad sitcom playing in the background, you know.
You know, I read some reviews online, and one of the things they had mentioned was that she was watching Drew Carey.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was. So I don't know if that was just somebody else's speculation, kind of like the same way you just did, or if that's really been in the sides or the official release of something or other. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, there wasn't a lot here that I didn't like. I mean, there were a couple little piddly things here and there. And the only, yeah, I mean, the thing we mentioned with the minor plot hole, if there are no angels, what exactly are demons?
Exactly.
You know, can you believe in one and not the other, especially when there's such a spiritual nature, and the holy water and the exorcisms and the Latin and the whole bit.
Right.
I mean, they use so much of that. It doesn't matter if it's from Jewish mysticism or Catholicism or whatever one they're using, Zoroastrian, which is what a lot of this came from. But it doesn't matter what religion standpoint they're coming from, they're using these things. And usually, for the most part,
right,
you have to have some sort of belief in what you're doing in order for the rituals and spell work to work.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, where does the power of these rituals come from? And, you know, how do they stand against the forces of evil with these things if there's no force of good that's giving them power or empowering them in the first place? Yeah, how can you have one without the other? It's, and you know, like you said, maybe it's Dean specifically angels, but it seems hard to believe that he would be so skeptical in the face of what they deal with every day.
I mean, unless he is just so jaded by all of the horror that's happened in his life that he just can't believe in good things.
And maybe he believes everything supernatural is evil, and that for some reason these tricks work on them, or, you know, there's some written law that makes them vulnerable to these things. But,
and maybe that's why Sam does the bulk of the exorcisms.
Oh, that's a good point.
We've only seen Dean do one of them.
That's right.
It's Sam that's always using it. So maybe it's because of his faith that he is able and more willing and, you know, the one to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was my big dislike, you know. And of course I have my continuing dislike from each episode is the fact that they still don't use gloves.
Okay. And now I was actually screaming at the TV this time, "You stupid boys."
I know, I was too. I was like, "You're wanted by the feds and you're not wearing gloves."
I can't believe it.
And they're in, like, you know, a crime scene. If anybody else discovers those bodies, they're going to dust for prints, you know, and lo and behold, they're going to have Dean's again. When they made, you know, they made a point way back in the episode where Dean was arrested that they found his fingerprints on all these crime scenes. And so they brought it to our attention and we're going to keep noticing. But that was my other little nitpick. And my, you know, going along with that, it's also really nitpicky was him holding that Verizon phone in the slow shot up at the beginning, you know, obvious product placement. But a necessary evil, I know, but it just seemed very obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I think they showed that because, you know, they wanted to see, oh, what was he listening to? And it kind of panned, oh, it's his MP3 player, okay. But, or phone. But at the same time, maybe they were trying to do a shot of what was on, what was playing.
Right.
Or maybe they just decided, oh, that's a good shot, we'll take it. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I think they actually use their own phones, from what I've heard.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
How funny.
Because Dean always had a different phone until just this episode.
It's true.
He had a flip phone, and now he has, was it the chocolate?
Yeah, it looked like the chocolate.
Yeah. I can't believe we know that.
I know. Advertising must be working.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I do use Verizon, but I don't have that phone. Fangirls everywhere run into Verizon to buy it, though, I'm telling you.
Right. I'm sure fangirls everywhere were booping their TiVos on that scene anyway. Yeah, that hotel room was really classy with the silhouettes of the women and everything.
But went well with the magic fingers.
Right, exactly.
They should have panned up to the mirrors on the ceiling, too.
Well, at least they didn't have a black light in there or anything.
But they seem to always use these kind of rooms that have, like, a... When you first walk in, there's, like, this wall of, like, glass or something on there.
Yeah.
Some sort of decoration. I don't know. I don't know about you, but I've never been in a hotel room that looked like that.
It's true. I wonder
if... And they keep finding them.
I know. I wonder if the set people are having a field day and just replacing that same set of decorations every time.
Yeah, I mean, they have to, but you'd think they would have a couple different sets to work from or move right. the partition, because that is an unusual setup for a hotel room.
That is funny, yeah. I imagine you have to go to some pretty old hotels to find it.
I love the episodes that are directed by Kim Manners.
Oh, yeah?
And I noticed that Sarah Gamble wrote this episode. She also wrote Faith and a few others. You can tell, I mean, I kind of, you have your favorite writers. If you really look at it, you're like, oh, I love this episode. And I go back and look at it, I'm like, oh, of course.
Right.
So when I saw it was, you know, those two, I'm like, ooh, I have good expectations on this one. And I thought it was great. I liked it a lot.
I did too.
Liked it a lot better than some of the others from this season.
I'm looking forward to seeing if any of their beliefs or, you know, in this, the whole good side of their supernatural battle is explored in the future.
I mean, they can't not talk about it. It's such an essential part of a supernatural show.
Right.
It'd be kind of weird if you just left it all out.
Right. I know it's weird, and like, I don't know if you watched Buffy and Angel, but... I know in Angel they did a lot with the powers that be, which just, you know, was a cheesy way of saying, you know, a force for good, I guess. And I'm glad they didn't go that route, you know, on this show. But I wonder if they'll be addressed, you know, if there is something working on their side.
I mean, it could have gone all melodramatic and sappy and, you know, a la Touched by an Angel or something
right.
like that, but...
Yeah, which was even referenced. Highway to Heaven.
Yeah, I love that there was, you know, some sarcasm in there when they were dealing with the issues, too.
My favorite quote of the episode was the one where after they visited the hooker's house and saw the sign, or not the hooker's house, but her victim, yeah, which was when Dean said, always remove your Christmas decorations after New Year's or you just might get filleted by a hooker from God.
I'm laughing on the inside. Since we're talking about quotes, my favorite one was that one, but my other one was about where Dean was all sarcastic. That lore about unicorns is true, too. I hear they ride on silver moonbeams and shoot rainbows out of their ass.
Wait, unicorns aren't real?
That's cute. I swear I've heard that before.
You know, it did sound really familiar. Poor unicorns.
I know.
They're so misunderstood. So, I'm sorry, I skipped right over speculation.
For me, the big question is, what are John's beliefs?
You know,
if Dean at such an early age lost his fate, I'm betting that John went through the same because he was an adult at the time.
And, right.
I mean, he is very attached to Mary, and even now, and... still wears his ring, and, you know, I don't know if he still had some sort of faith, if that was his faith, that he was holding on to his revenge and his, I'm doing this for Mary, and that's the only thing he believed in.
Right.
Or if some sort of higher power was helping him get through this. I don't know. I would bet it's more he was dependent on himself and Mary's legacy than anything else. And maybe that's where Dean got a lot of his sort of, you know, atheist agnostic views. Because he's somewhere in between those, I think.
I would guess that John relied a lot on himself and that his, you know, desire for revenge is what gave him strength and pretty much burned out everything else because he didn't seem to be the type to look to a higher power or an afterlife to get him through or give him hope, you know. It was more like sustained on rage and revenge and you know, and doing his job to protect other people from what he went through.
Yeah.
And I agree, and that's probably where Dean picked it up, where it's importance of here and now and, you know, getting your revenge and protecting people that are here on Earth and not worrying about what's going on anywhere else.
But he had to have done a lot of research to figure out all of that different spell work and all the different religious things that they do use, the holy water, the, you know, all of the little, you know, rituals that they use.
Right.
I mean, it's not like there's a hunter's book out there, some sort of, you know,
right. Right. Well, there is now if you count his journal.
Well, yeah. But I mean, he had to have come up with that stuff somewhere.
Right.
And it's not like he just took it all from other people. I'm sure some of it he did. But I'm sure some of it he did research on his own and figured out stuff. He did immerse himself in some sort of religious doctrine of some sort. He had to have. But whether or not he just used it to as a means to what he needed, or
right.
if it was something that was coming from a personal side, I doubt we'll ever find anything out on that.
Oh, yeah. It seems to me that it was more of a weapon as opposed to a means for salvation. But, you know, who knows? Who knows how much we're going to find out about John in the future?
Very end, where the guy dies in the car with the big metal pole. The cool scene. Very cool.
Right.
But, you know, I was watching Magnolia the other day.
And oh, yeah?
The beginning, I don't know, have you ever seen it?
Yes.
Okay, the very beginning where they do, you know, the scuba diver in the tree. And, you know, the guy who was committing suicide and got shot through the window by his parents of a gun that he had loaded. I mean, it's all this coincidence.
Right.
And I was thinking about that. I'm like, could the guy's death could have been a freak accident, or was it some
right.
sort of divine intervention? And Dean would definitely be on the side of, oh, it was just some freak thing. Things like that happen. But
right.
he had that moment after all of what had happened where he's like, well, maybe it is God's will. And he gets that look on his face. I mean, it really got me thinking. I'm like, well, what do you think? I mean, they left it totally open for interpretation.
In that situation, it's a good thing that it happened, because what would Dean have done if he did catch up to him?
I'm like, what are you going to do? Poke him? Like,
right, exactly. Say, hey, don't do that. It's the whole situation that Dean, you know, discussed with Gordon before, where Gordon wants to kill Sam before he does anything bad. And that was the situation replayed here where, you know, can Dean really do anything to this guy? Yeah, he beat that girl, but can he kill him? You know, in the chance that he might hurt people in the future? Or does he kill Sam, like you mentioned, because he's supposed to do something in the future that's wrong? And
honestly, the guy was human. He wasn't supernatural. There wasn't
right.
anything wrong with him.
Exactly.
I mean, Dean probably would have beat him up, but he would have been just devastated if he killed a human, an innocent.
Right.
As far as his job is concerned.
I know. So, you know, in that situation, not only was the man taken care of and punished for what he was going to do or what he did, but in that situation, Dean was also relieved of having to take any action.
Yeah, I mean, he does carry a whole car full of weapons. Easy
right.
enough when you're full of adrenaline to go beyond what you normally
right.
would do.
Yep, because, you know, you can't, well, you can call the cops, but you'd have to pull a Spider-Man and tie him up first and leave the scene. Yep, but they left it very open-ended, and, you know, I don't think that they're trying to give us an answer either, or make us decide. The other question I had was, you know, yes, Dean did witness that, and like you said, he's the type to believe that was a coincidence. It's, you know, and surely the talk with Sam may have influenced his thinking some, you know, made him a little more open-minded, or at least thinking about the possibility of angels and a good supernatural force. But
yeah.
So when he comes back to the hotel room and he's talking to Sam and he tells him that he thinks, well, maybe it was God's will, you think he really believes that? Or is he trying to make Sam feel better because he sees how devastated he is when Sam loses some of that hope that he had?
Oh, that's a great point. I hadn't even thought about it that way.
And I don't know, maybe that's reading too much into it, but I thought it was a possibility that perhaps he was laying it on a little thick because he wanted to make Sam feel better.
Yeah, for the first time he may have thought, oh, it could be, and it was a possibility instead of just writing it off entirely.
Right.
And so it was making him feel better and Sam.
And that's what I enjoyed about it, even though it wasn't as, you know, action-packed or gory as some of the other episodes.
Well, but some of the best ones from first season were just the same way. They were a little bit slower moving, like Faith, like Dead in the Water, you know, Prominence.
Right.
Some of these that were not the action-packed shows, but they really gave us so much in character development. I mean, these guys don't live the life of James Bond. I mean, their lives are not all action-packed and exciting all the time.
Right.
That's just not who they are.
Right. A lot of driving.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's a lot of bad fast food involved.
Yeah.
But
lumpy hotel beds, you know,
right?
All the stuff we don't see. But
exactly. And like we discussed earlier, this is the kind of situation and the kind of discussion that's inevitable when they're in this occupation, and it's good that it was addressed and, you know, given room for the characters to grow in this, you know, the breadth of the episode. Yeah, I noted that I recognized Father Gregory from Dawson's Creek, which I don't know if I should be sad about that or not.
What character did he play?
He played a very short-lived character. I think he was the first gay boyfriend for the Jack character on the show. I think his name was Toby or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I should go back and look. I like Toby.
Yeah, and I think he cried in Dawson's Creek like he cried here, so I could make the connection easier.
I knew he looked familiar, and I just couldn't think about it. I was busy thinking about all the other stuff.
Right. I looked it up afterwards. I was like, I know I've seen him before. I think it's on Dawson's Creek.
But you know, the WB or CW loves to recycle people.
Right.
They love it.
They do.
Let's move on to legends and references. Here is an overview of angelology with Greg. An angel is a supernatural being found in many religions. In Christianity, Judaism, Zoroastrianism, and Islam, they typically act as messengers from God. The English word came from Latin angelus, which came from the Greek angelos, meaning messenger. The closest Hebrew word for angel is malak, also meaning messenger. Angelology is a branch of theology that deals with the hierarchical system of angels, messengers, celestial powers, or emanations, and the study of such systems. It primarily relates to Kabbalistic Judaism and Christianity, where it is one of the 10 major branches of theology, albeit a neglected one. Now let's talk about the appearance of angels. In the Hebrew Bible, angels often appear to people in the shape of humans of extraordinary beauty, and often are not immediately recognized as angels. Some fly through the air, some become invisible, sacrifices touched by one are often consumed by fire, and they may disappear in sacrificial fire. Although superhuman, angels can assume human form, and this is the earliest conception. Gradually, and especially in post-biblical times, angels came to be bodied forth in a form corresponding to the nature of the mission to be fulfilled, generally, however, the human form. Angels bear drawn swords or other destroying weapons in their hands. One carries an ink horn by his side and ride on horses. Angels are thought to possess wings and are often described in the Bible and depicted in Christian, Jewish, and Zoroastrian art. They are commonly depicted with halos. Although most theologians in the cultures mentioned previously would agree that angels are technically genderless in the normal human sense, all references in Jewish, Christian, and other holy writings mentioned before give angels a masculine aspect. For example, angels are given tasks such as warrior, herald, guard, wrestler, mover of large stones, which in traditional societies would have all been tasks typically performed by men. The few canonical names of angels are recognized in most cultures as masculine names. In modern Western culture, some angels are depicted as having female forms, facial features, and names, and many New Age practitioners speak of masculine and feminine angels. However, in the older traditions, angels had a distinctly masculine tone. So what is the purpose of an angel? Well, in the Bible, angels are a medium of God's power, and they exist to execute God's will. Angels reveal themselves to individuals, as well as to the nation whole, to announce events, either good or bad, affecting humans. A fallen angel is an angel that has been banished from heaven. Often such banishment is a punishment for disobeying or rebelling against God. The best-known fallen angel is Lucifer. According to some traditions, fallen angels roam the earth until Judgment Day when they will be banished to hell. There are a number of beliefs regarding fallen angels. Many focus on issues of free will, lust, pride, or the incomprehensibility of the acts of God. An act of God of creation was foreseen as resulting in multiple outcomes in each of these three doctrines that were traits held by certain angels. Fallen angels foresaw the doom impending. It is generally accepted by most Christians that the fallen angels were cast out of heaven because of free will. Pride is usually taught as the reason the angels were expelled. One of the universally feared angels, known and dreaded in every major religion in the world, is the angel of death. It is found all over the earth throughout all of history, existing as a spiritual embodiment of the great mystery of passing into the next world. He is the appointed servant of God with the task of bringing an end at the appointed time to the lives of humans. Perhaps the most vivid of his incarnations was as a horror-inducing angel of fell visage who stands at the head of a dying person with a sword drawn, its tip over the mouth of the poor soul struggling to cling to life. A drop of poison falls from the tip into the mouth of the gasping human whose struggle in this world is then at an end. We've seen the Angel of Death, of course, on Supernatural before, usually in the form of a Reaper, but this has shown up on a lot of fantasy and sci-fi shows previously, such as Charmed. The Archangel Michael plays an important role in the Catholic Church. They honor Michael with four main titles or offices. He is the Christian Angel of Death, carrying the souls of all deceased to heaven, where they are winged in his perfectly balanced scales, hence Michael is often depicted holding scales. At the honor of death, Michael descends and gives each soul the chance to redeem itself before passing, thus consternating the devil and his minions. Michael is the special patron of the chosen people in the Old Testament and is guardian of the church. It is thus not unusual for the angel to be revered by the military order of knights during the Middle Ages. Last, he is the supreme entity of Satan and the fallen angels. And there's a brief overview of angelology. Let's move on to references. Houses of the Holy. The episode title comes from an album by Led Zeppelin by the same name, which was released in 1973. The album title's a dedication by the band to their fans who appeared at venues they dubbed, quote, Houses of the Holy. This album was a stylistic turning point in Led Zeppelin's career. Guitar riffs became heavier, losing some of their blues influences, and the lyrics turned towards mysticism to a greater degree. It's also an album featuring styles not seen on previous Led Zeppelin albums. Next, they talked about Deanna Laney. In May 2003, Deanna Laney believed God ordered her to kill her children. Laney, who is a deeply religious person, had a series of delusions on the day of the killings. She said she saw Aaron with a spear, then throwing a rock, then squeezing a frog, and believes God was suggesting she should either stab, stone, or strangle her children. She said at first she resisted, but she felt she had to do what she perceived to be God's will to prove her faith. A Texas jury found Deanna Laney not guilty by reason of insanity for fatally beating two of her young sons with rocks and seriously injuring a third. She faces commitment to a mental facility for an unspecified amount of time. In a similar case, Andrea Yates contended that Satan ordered her to kill her five children to save them from eternal damnation. They also mentioned redemption. It's a concept referring to forgiveness or absolution for past sins and protection from eternal damnation. They also mentioned Roma Downey. She's an actress and producer best known for her role as Della Reese's employee, Monica, the main character of the TV series Touched by an Angel, which ran 1994 to 2003. Her most famous prior roles were as Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis on the 1991 TV movie A Woman Named Jackie, and as the Amazon leader in Hercules and the Amazon Women. They also talked about seance, and we've discussed this before. It's an attempt to communicate with the dead. The seance, or sitting, is led by a medium who goes into a trance and theoretically allows the dead to communicate through her. And in this reference, they talked about Ghost, which is a 1990 film. Whoopi Goldberg plays a psychic medium who communicates with ghosts through seance. In preparation for their seance, Dean bought a SpongeBob SquarePants placemat. SpongeBob SquarePants is a sponge who lives in a pineapple at the bottom of the sea. He's a cartoon character, of course, and the series is set in the Pacific Ocean in the city of Bikini Bottom and the surrounding lagoon floor. It first aired in the U.S. on Nickelodeon in 1999. They mentioned The 700 Club, and this is the flagship news talk show of the Christian Broadcasting Network, airing on cable's ABC Family and in syndication through the United States and Canada. In production since 1966, this show presents news stories from Robertson's religious and political perspective, often relating stories to passages from the Bible, which are generally followed by commentary from the hosts. The style of news reporting on the show has been criticized by many as unfairly biased, alleging framing stories in a manner said to reflect Robertson's views. Now, Dean notices wormwood growing on the headstone of the recently deceased priest. Artemisia is a large, diverse genus of plants with between 200 to 400 species belonging to the daisy family, Astaracae. It comprises of hardy herbs and shrubs known for the volatile oils. They grow in temperate climates of the northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere, usually in dry or semi-dry habitats. Common names used for several species include wormwood, mugwort, sagebrush, and sagewort, while a few species have unique names. And finally, they referenced last rites. These are only administered to people in immediate danger of death. The term last rite refers to three distinct rites. 1. Anointing of the sick, 2. Penance and Eucharist, and the last of which, then administered to the dying, is known as viaticum, a word whose original meaning in Latin was provision for the journey. And let's move on to articles with Krista. This is 5 Great Fan Vids, Comedy Edition. The first one is Star Wars by Frick Angel. This is at YouTube, and I'll put all of these links in the show notes for you. If you just watch one of these, this would be the one. Kripke's always making Star Wars comparisons with the show, to some of our chagrin, but this matchup of the trailer to Supernatural clips is so well done that it makes you think about how awesome it would be to see ours on the big screen. The next one is Bitch Face by Monkey Dude, M-O-N-K-I-E-D-U-D-E. Again, this is on YouTube. Aw, poor Sam got a bad rap in the first season for the perpetual, some might say, grumpy face. Hey, he was grieving, but here's a cute look at Sam's brooding repertoire. Next is Boonie's Badass, again on YouTube. John Winchester and Demon John have a parenting chat. It's about as funny as you think it would be, complete with SpongeBob references. The next one is Wonder Boy, and this is at community.livejournal.com/supernaturalvid/18077. This was a first season vid made by one of the fandom's most talented vidders, Taliesin, to the already funny Tenacious D song Wonder Boy. It's all about our Dean Winchester, who most consider a Wonder Boy in one way or another. And finally, we have Hangin' Tough. This is at mkitty-03.livejournal.com/164511. New Kids on the Block might not have exactly passed the test of time, but it's hilarious and fitting as Sam and Dean make it through the episodes, trying to hang on to their cool. Thanks, Krista, for those. And let's move on to music. Knockin' on Heaven's Door by Bob Dylan was the song they played at the end, and Down on Love by Jamie Dunlap was a song playing on Dean's cell phone when he was playing with the Magic Fingers. A huge thanks to Jamie Dunlap for allowing me to play Down on Love for you tonight. Enjoy. Check out Jamie's website at jamiedunlapmusic.com. Jamie is a very talented composer with hundreds of song placements on network TV. He has scored South Park since season 5, and you can find his work on the History Channel, CMT, MTV, and in independent film. In 2005, he was nominated for an Emmy for his work on the History Channel's Rwanda, Do the Scars Ever Fade? On his website, you can listen to a score he did for Supernatural in a previous episode, although I cannot place it just yet. Thanks, Jamie, for letting us play your song tonight. That's it for this week. Join us again when we post a new episode in the next couple days. Sorry for the delay in this episode. Life got in the way. But thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.